It's really been a great event, not only for me to be able to engage with many of you so far, get to see some colleagues who I haven't seen in a while, plus get to meet new people. What I'm going to try to do over the next 30 minutes or so is share with you a variety of different perspectives, not only of the things that we're doing here in Washington, but I'm going to try something different. I'm actually going to try to reconnect a lot of the points that several of my esteemed colleagues this morning made and see if we can kind of make this all a sense. So we'll make this a joint adventure. Just as a bit of background, of course, I'm now in Washington, D.C. I've been there nearly 3 years running the Wind and Water Power Technologies Program. And although I'll hint throughout the talk of what we do, but just in generality, when you think of wind, offshore wind, land-based wind, distributed wind, when you think about water power, it's even a more diverse portfolio where we're doing not only hydropower technologies, which the great state of New York has quite a bit of, as well as marine hydrokinetics. So how do we convert from waves, tides, currents, and other sources? So it's a very, very eclectic but very exciting portfolio. I tell people at times, I'm responsible for the oldest renewable generation source, kind of in hydropower and others, and kind of more the newest kid on the block, which is marine hydrokinetics. So, and everything in between, inclusive of wind. So it's a very exciting time. I, as many several of the students here, started out my career in energy as an engineer. As a bit of background, it's been a fantastic journey for me. I've been doing this for nearly 20 years and had the great opportunity to work at a national laboratory where we were trying to develop the fundamental science and innovation that have, in some part, done its part to make these technology cost competitive. And 3 years ago, I don't know what I was thinking. It was a weak moment. Decided to go to Washington, and I haven't left. So it's been quite a journey for me and my family, but it's been great. Washington is an exciting place. I know that there are times that we struggle, and I'll talk about policies and things of that nature, but I think a lot of things happen there, and I think that it's a great opportunity to serve all of you for the small portfolio that I'm responsible for, and we'll talk through that throughout the time. One of the things that I was doing, as you'll see, most cover sheets from a Department of Energy presentation are not focused on projects in New York, but as I was really trying to think about not only my remarks here with all of you, I spent a little bit of time just understanding New York. Of course, I've had the opportunity to come to New York several times, great state, a lot to offer. But when I was thinking about it from the renewable perspective, it was very, very apparent that New York has made some significant strides in trying to not only do their part in terms of a clean energy economy, but when you reflect on their portfolio, it is truly impressive. Not only leveraging a high percentage of hydropower asset to what you're doing today, both in wind, solar, and other sources, it really is an impressive story. And I think that for those of you that are from New York, it's a story that you should be proud of. And that's been very apparent in my very, very simple look at your particular story. So I'd like to start out because, of course, although we're focused in the story for New York, I think it's important to recognize that all these states have an interplay with one another. And I think when we think about transformational changes at the state level, in some cases, if you look at the grid infrastructure at the regional level, and of course the lens that we have to play at the national level, there's an interconnection in all these. And I think it's important to recognize that as we're thinking about a transformation of our electrical system, the connectivity amongst our neighboring states, the regions, and of course the decisions that are made at the national level are important and will play a key factor of how the future will look. As many of you know, the administration has really challenged the nation with some aggressive targets. Those targets can be divided into clean energy, aggressive targets 80%. I think some of the comments and questions were 100% renewables. The administration is looking at 80% of our nation's electricity from clean energy sources. Now, clean energy sources, for those of you that are not familiar, are nuclear energy counts for that, natural gas, fossil with sequestration, as well as renewables. I guess that wasn't popular, but my point is that's not my definition, but I think it gives us a target. And as I think when the panel was up here and thinking, I think having a target for the nation, it is a key stepping stone as to how do we kind of coalesce all of our ingenuity, all of our thinking, all of our motivation, and all of our technology together to really transform the world as we know it. There are also some aggressive targets, I think, in greenhouse gases. I think some of the nearer-term targets will be achieved because there has been a bit of transformation over the recent years in terms of large deployments of wind, significant deployments in solar. I think that the immediate targets are achievable. The longer-term targets are going to be a bit more challenging, but I think they are doable. The question is, how quickly can we decarbonize our system, and how quickly can we bring online these sources that we've been discussing throughout the day? I really appreciated Dan's triangle. I think about them as pillars and try to connect how these things interplay from my perspective and what I've been able to absorb from Dan's comments. As we think about the administration, the Department of Energy, of course, has quite a diverse mission. Although the name is Department of Energy, what you may not recognize is that's not all we do. We have responsibility for the nuclear stockpile. But energy is a vibrant piece of the department. And everything of what we do, the office that I'm a part of, in energy efficiency and renewable energy, which has responsibility from everything from the generation side, from the efficiency side, and as Ashok mentioned, you know, the interplay and the relationships between them both, I think, is an important piece, as well as the transportation piece. What are we doing in the next generation vehicles, in biofuels, et cetera? So it's a big portfolio. It's about a $2 billion portfolio. But we all share that same want to really transform energy as we think about it. And I think we're just trying to do our part in that transformation. Most offices in our department, as you can imagine, has to have key targets around cost effectiveness. How do we improve technology as that one pillar that Dan mentioned earlier? But it cannot stand alone. We also work in what we call market acceleration pieces. Think about market acceleration as the critical things that must happen to deploy these sources. Because there are places in this country where the technology, you can give it out for free. But the market barriers are so large that if you do not address them, it will not take. In some cases, these technology solutions create challenges to other missions. Take wind, for example. You will be visiting the Fenner Wind Farm. There's a lot of great work that was done to get that wind farm to be installed. But it also pose some challenges in terms of the radar network, not something that we as this kind of community think about. But the folks that are responsible for the safety of every single one of aircraft have shared some concerns. Our department has worked very closely with them to try to address them. So the question for us is not only how we make technology competitive, not only how we improve the permitting and the siting process at the federal level, at the state level, but how do we think of a future that, independent of all the barriers and challenges that we may face, how do we coexist? How do we coexist with the environment? How do we coexist with the other missions that the nation has? And how do we do this responsibly? And that's the theme that we try to abide by in the Department of Energy, especially in the program that I'm responsible for. One of the most exciting things that I think we have today, and if you allow my definition just for the few moments that I'll be spending with you, the fact is that renewables today are over 13% of our nation's electricity. Folks that were here 20, 30 years ago couldn't have said that. But without their efforts, we couldn't be saying that today. So that's an important thing to think about as we kind of reflect on not only what we're doing today, but what do we leave for the generations that are sitting all across the room that will inherit whatever we leave them, and they must continue to carry the torch. Again, just something that I encourage all of you to think about. It's been a great journey for many new renewables, the emerging set of renewables, wind energy. In some parts of our country, it is the most cost-competitive option, beating natural gas and others. We've seen great strides in the solar industry, which, of course, translates to market certainty and aggressive deployment across the U.S., and many other renewables that have been discussed here will have a key role in the future energy mix. Those include geothermal, which were mentioned throughout the day. And we believe as well that technology sources such as marine hydrokinetics, waves, tides will play a significant role. The question is, when will that happen? How would it happen? But most importantly, how do we think about all these sources, not in isolation, all these sources, how they come together and take advantage of their own traditional characteristics, and we find a way to integrate them together into a much more resilient energy picture. But of course, this is not going to be easy. And I think that's been a theme that we have heard throughout the day. There is what we call a bit of a crossroads that we must realize its reality. But the question is, are we going to be able to stand up to the challenge and deal with it? And I believe for us like this, the work that we do independently in whatever part of the sector we do gives me confidence that this can be done. So we have a sense of urgency in terms of the national goals. Those could be, again, greenhouse gases. One thing we don't talk about in this part of the country as much as we do in others is water. And the interplay between water and electricity in parts of a country, that is a true, true challenge. We also don't talk in this part of the country the amount of energy that we use just to move water. These are all very important things that we get to think about on a daily basis in D.C. because it is our job to think about it from a national perspective and understand what are the local challenges at the state and regional levels. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, there are significant barriers to entry. There is apprehension at times, and I, of course, haven't mentioned even NIMBYism and some of those things, but transmission constraint. There is a mismatch in timing of when you deploy a renewable system to how long it takes to permit a transmission line. We just must recognize, understand it, and try to come up with a pathway working forward. Siting and permitting, I think we all know them, environmental issues, radar, as I mentioned, and renewables, and other types of things that must be considered, financing, risk, and so forth. And there are uncertainties, which now I'm trying to, again, bring the second pillar that Dan showed this morning, which is uncertainty in policies. And it's I agree wholeheartedly that there are significant vehicles that could be much better, but the reality is that these uncertainties and policies are disruptive today. So the question is, how do we reflect on those, and how do we think of future where we can either be more resilient from a policy perspective, rely on other vehicles that are significantly better, but at the same time recognizing that these are the vehicles that are here today, and there is an intrinsic dependence that they are causing, and it sometimes causes disruption, and as I'll show in a minute. Now, one of the things that this nation is blessed with is a pretty darn good story from a resource perspective. This country is blessed with significant indigenous resources of all types. And when we look at the sheer numbers in terms of total deployment that could be exploited across the nation, it's easy to realize that, of course, there's significant more resource than there are needs. Just to capture people's minds in generality, we have about 1 terawatt, so 1,000 gigawatts of installed capacity today, just in generality. So when you see these numbers and you add them up, it's easy to recognize that there's significant more resource potential than there is need. But of course, it's also important to recognize that we're not going to deploy everything that's on this map, but at least it gives us confidence that what needs to be done can be done. And that's the important piece to recognize. The other nice thing that you can see is that if you overlay all these maps, the sum of all their parts really represents a nice picture for the U.S. Not all of these resources are created equal, and not all of these resources are available everywhere. So the question is, how do we look at this at the state, the regional level, understand what our ability to exploit those resources are, and what do we do to maximize their contributions? But at least it allows us, for those of you in school, to have a pretty good beginning given problem to the problem. You have a vast resource, and that's a very, very good story. What's missing from here is the EGS map that Dan showed, that'll, again, further improve the situation. I had both maps of New York, but I chose because per the conversations to just show a detailed offshore wind energy map for New York. It is not to say that we should be exclusive of land-based, and of course from me you can accept that I can make that statement because I am a fan of wind. But offshore, it's yet to be discovered across the U.S. I think as the state of New York, where we're standing here today, it's important to reflect on what the opportunities are. I think you also have a lot of attributes that should be considered when decisions are being made, proximity to large load centers, et cetera. But these are the kinds of information that we try to provide the nation at a state-by-state level for the states to be able to make decisions. I'll give you a story of a different state I recognize, but the power of information. By 2005, the state of the industry, wind industry as a matter of fact, was installing machines at about 50 meter heights, okay? Pretty tall.
But when we did 50-meter maps, the state of Indiana recognized that, gosh, we cannot have wind. There's really no resource. What happened is that great people, great across the entire chain, decided it may be a good idea to go to a higher resource. And today, machines are being installed approximately at 80 meters of height. But when you do this map for the state of Indiana, what happens is all of a sudden it glows. They have a vast resource. And now they have gone pretty aggressive on wind. So the power of information is incredibly important. Then you overlay about what your opportunities are. You look at each one of your options, and I think it's easy to say that a story can be put together. Now, I think that also it's important to recognize what are some of the challenges or opportunities to high penetration. I think we need to realize the significant transformation that must happen on the electrical sector. But I think we need a sustained buildup. We talked this morning about the need for consistency. The disruption that we are seeing in terms of fits and starts due to policy or other legislation and so forth are not necessarily helpful. What we haven't talked about, and I was a bit surprised this throughout the day, is jobs and the opportunities that these industries and these sectors bring to the local communities in terms of jobs. And I was a bit surprised that wasn't brought up, but I think we all recognize the opportunities. Just to put it into perspective, the industries that we have today, the wind industry as a whole has about 80,000 sustainable jobs across the U.S., and the solar industry, as an example, has 120,000 jobs. Those were not the numbers if we would have stood here when this conference started 10 years ago. But I think it's important to remember that jobs are a key part of our story. In New York, on its own, I'm amazed at the amount of intellectual capital that there's here. I've got to interact with companies like GE, Lockheed Martin, and others that are just right here, and you have great schools. So the question is, how do you harness all that potential and apply it in different ways that you're already applying it? You have 50 companies in the renewable space today that are recognized contributing to wind and solar. What could a future like that look? The other thing that I encourage you to recognize is that some of these sources, wind is a key example, intrinsically brings jobs to the U.S. if they're a market certainty. And the reason that is that I can state that for wind is because these machines are very, very large. And these machines carry a huge transportation component to them in terms of costs. That allows us that with market certainty have local manufacturing. There is a reason why we have gone from 25% local content to nearly 80% local content in the U.S. wind industry in a short 6 years. So the market is incredibly powerful. And there are attributes that can be leveraged, and some of our industries in the renewable space really bring those attributes with them. And again, another way to think about renewable and the opportunities. Now, I want to talk about the second pillar that Mr. Dan Riker shared with us. It's a bit of a daunting, unnerving story if you're in the wind industry for many, many reasons. And I want to focus on two numbers. Although the same behavior happened here, the industry really, truly hadn't arrived. Right? At those points in time, we were still importing a lot of technology. Right, although very, very disruptive, and it clearly articulates the power and the challenges associated with uncertainty and policy, I encourage you to look at the right side more. For those of you that like mathematics, that is an order of magnitude difference in 1 year. Of course, solar industry may say this is great, more market share for me, others. That's if we think about them in single points and in single companies. What does that do to a manufacturing base? If I just said that the reality is that the wind industry can bring a lot of jobs, if there is no demand, those jobs have to go away. And these are highly capital intensive industries. So the chances of them coming back are not very good. So how do we create mechanisms and vehicle that provide certainty as these technologies continue to achieve cost parity and allow us to reap the benefits that they bring with them? That's the way that we think about this problem. We believe that because of the definition of the production tax credit, we believe that 2014 and 2015 will be good, but a production tax credit is expired right now. And there is a virtuality term right now because of the lag in the system, the manufacturing, and the definition that was allowed, which why we will get almost a false positive that the industry's back. So I think that's another way to think about it. So we think about these things as I'm hopefully trying to articulate quite deeply. Now, I started out by saying that the folks that came before several of us 20, 30 years ago, some which I had the distinct honor to have dinner with last night, they dealt with this. It was aspiration and a lot of motivation that allowed those people to persevere and still want to be a part of it today. The American Wind Energy Association conference, which if you're going to, will be next month. It used to be 180 people, but most of them had other characteristics. They had ponytails and flip-flops. And they were the hippies of their time, right? Now they're in pinstripe suits, but most of those come from Washington. But independent of that, we have changed this industry. But it is innovation and the pillar that was shared of technology and American ingenuity to a vast part. Of course, Europe and others have contributed, but the U.S. has done an immense amount in every one of these sectors. So I think the time is different now. I think the conversations are different now. The question that we must ask each other is, do we want to take advantage of this opportunity? It's not easy. It won't come cheap. But I think that we can have a fundamental different conversation today that we could have 20, 30 years ago. And this is the information that allows us to have a bit of confidence in doing so. Great growth curves in wind. There's a natural, simple macroeconomics, cost curve, supply and demand, things change. Here you can see what's happening in lighting. Ashok mentioned a lot about efficiency. Things are getting quite cost competitive. We're seeing them everywhere. You see them in Walmart, you see them in Target, you see them everywhere you go, they're there. So I think that the technology is definitely getting there, as well as solar photovoltaics. We're not there yet, but the department has an aggressive agenda called the Sunshot Initiative to get to $1 a watt by 2020. That initiative started in 2010, and in a mere 4 years, it is 60% towards its goal. Not to say that the federal government did it all by himself. Absolutely not. China helped. But my point is that we're getting there. But the reality is that those kind of market forces are allowing us to have the conversation that we are having today. Electric vehicles, same thing. I think that there's a lot of opportunities there. Part of the EERE mission, the energy efficiency and renewable energy, a lot of great work being done there, not only in hybrid vehicles, even in combustion, as well as other opportunities. It's amazing to see what has happened over time. I hope for those of you that are going on the tour this afternoon, you'll get to see machines. They'll look pretty big if you've never seen a big turbine. They're bigger ones. So keep that in perspective. Because people go, not in my backyard, of course. If you like renewables and you understand what they bring, what they offer, you will recognize that there's other things. As machines get bigger, capacity factors go up, costs go down, and you have less of them, as a matter of fact. So you got to think about it. There are attributes to getting bigger that are not commonly stated. But these machines are getting very, very big. For those of you that like offshore, I think that Kit definitely expressed her enthusiasm and others for it last night. I am a fan. There are 8-megawatt machines being deployed today in the beta production site. The rotor, which is the disc, significantly almost a football field and a half. It's not football season. I couldn't think of a baseball analogy. But for those of you that like football, I know this part of the country does. A football field and a half, it is the rotor disc of these machines. And they are delivering power in some parts of our country for power purchase agreements of 4 cents a kilowatt hour in Texas and others. Just put that in perspective. The other thing that I tell people to remind themselves is how astonishing that is from, and I'm gonna put an analogy that we can all somewhat relate to. These machines are very big machines, and when you see them, if you're going on the tour, you'll be a bit more impressed. The total system cost to make that power cheap is about $6 a pound. Your phone weighs less than a pound, and you paid $400 just to put it into perspective if you have an iPhone. So just think about what have we done from an engineering, from whatever perspective, to make these industries cost effective. $6 a pound is the entire system cost of a wind turbine today. Just compare it to your cell phone. I think compare it to anything that you want. It's an impressive statistic to reflect on. think Ashok mentioned efficiency. Dan and others mentioned the role of technology. I think there was some great discussion about other sources, what's going on here in the New York Sun. How do we stay competitive? There's just a lot of great points, and I apologize for not capturing them all. But we spent a lot of time talking about what we're calling the device layer, these components. We got to think about how these things are going to talk to one another. We talked about smart grid, and of course, smart grids means 1,000 things to 1,000 different people. I don't think I've ever heard the word dumb grid, so it's interesting that they call it smart grid, but it is what it is. We haven't talked about security, right? That's really important too. When we think about resiliency, we got to talk about security, right? We live in an IT world today, and each one of these machines has an IP address and everything. What if those things get hacked? We got to think about all these things that create resilience, because the one thing that is true and probably will never change is that now that we don't have landlines, that was mentioned earlier, if you go home and you turn on the switch and light goes on, you make a call within 10 seconds to say, what's going on here, right? So there is limited patience for unreliability. There's a huge expectation on economics. It's an interesting time. But cyber, I think, is an important piece. And all the market forces and so forth. I thought the schematic, although a bit busy, really allows us to kind of think about all the things that must happen if it isn't about setting a really aggressive aspirational agenda of can we be 100% renewables, if it isn't setting other targets that we think are important as a nation or as a state or as a region. We got to think about all the things that have to happen and who's going to do all these things in order to fully realize a future that we all believe needs to happen. So I think that's an important piece. The other thing that's important, and I wanted to highlight a few examples, because when you think about renewables, not a lot of people think about renewables and resiliency. And I want to just share a few examples, which I think hopefully you'll remember, but hopefully maybe even lets you think about renewables a little bit differently. The word that was used on stage by some of my colleagues was intermittency. I like variability because I like sine waves better than square waves, so I think variability is a better term for me. But I like that term because they are variable, and they do not operate like what we grew up on. You do not have a stick that you can throttle and ask for more power. But there is technology that allows us to use them smarter, right? Those technology may be forecasting for wind and solar, other things that make it virtually more dispatchable than one may believe. Now, many of you may remember, because for those of us in the East Coast, we had a pretty rough winter. And this January, we had some issues across our entire electrical system, right? We had some faults in our system where some fossil generation, maybe some nuclear generations, could not come up online and maybe faulted. What doesn't get communicated is that during that time, because there was quite a bit of wind, there was significant contributions by a source that's not considered to be one to provide a level of resiliency. So if you're interested to learn a little bit about more of one of those articles, let Rhea know. She can contact me. I'd be glad to share them with you. But it's another term that we haven't talked about. There are challenges to integrating high penetrations of variable sources, no doubt. But I think we have to understand what they fully have to offer so we can make the best decisions moving forward. I'll leave you with a few things. There's a set of urgency for all of us that we must really recognize. I think with that urgency also comes a reality that we can now say that we have options. It's also important to recognize and just know that not all these options are not going to solve everything. But there are other options that are being designed and looked at today that will replace or augment or collaborate or work in concert with what we have today. But today we have options, and I think we owe it to ourselves, I think we owe it to our planet, I think we owe it to our children, our grandchildren's, and the generations to come. It's the time is now. I think we can do it. From Washington, we're just trying to do our little part. We hope we're making a difference. I tell people it's a great honor to serve all of you. Our program is really your program. So come see us if you're in Washington. Thank you very much.